You're listening to All News All Morning on the Motherlode's News Station, AM 1450 and FM 102.7 KVML. Motherlode District 4 Congressman Tom McClintock strongly opposed the recent House passage of the use of force termination resolution. He details exactly why he opposed it. Here are McClintock's edited words.
Mr. Speaker, throughout the debate on the so-called War Powers Resolution, some fundamental misunderstandings surfaced that I think need to be addressed. The first misunderstanding is that the justification for the attack that killed Soleimani was that he was an evil terrorist responsible for the deaths of hundreds of Americans. While there are a lot of evil terrorists out there, and that does not give the president authority to launch attacks on foreign countries to kill them. But what did give the president authority in this case was the fact that Soleimani was acting as an armed combatant against U.S. forces in a war zone in which the Congress had authorized the president to take military action through the authorization for the use of military force in Iraq in 2002. Now, I hate to shock my woke colleagues, but killing active enemy combatants is what war is all about, and it is a war that Congress started with that act. That act provides, quote, "The president is authorized to use the armed forces of the United States as he determines to be necessary and appropriate in order to defend the national security of the United States against the continuing threat posed by Iraq," end quote. Now, the very nature of this authority includes combating hostile militia and armed proxies acting within Iraq against American forces. That is exactly what the president did. The authorization to use military force did not end with the defeat of Saddam Hussein any more than the president's military authority in Japan and Germany ended with the defeat of Hirohito and Hitler. In those cases, the president's authority didn't terminate until 1952 and 1955, respectively, and the president's military authority in Iraq remains in effect until the president and Congress terminate it. Now, the second misunderstanding is that the president's action was an attack on Iran. It most certainly was not. It was carried out in the theater of war defined by Congress against a combatant who is commanding hostile forces against American troops. Not only did the president act entirely within his legal authority as commander-in-chief, but within his moral responsibility to protect American military and diplomatic personnel and American citizens in Iraq. The third misunderstanding is that the War Powers Act is applicable in this circumstance. The War Powers Act governs only those circumstances when the president responds without congressional authority to an attack upon the United States, its territory or possessions, or its armed forces. In this case, the president already had congressional authority. The fourth misunderstanding is that the attack on Soleimani was equivalent to President Obama's attack on Libya. The two are entirely different matters. The attack on Libya had no congressional authorization, and the War Powers Act did not apply because Mr. Obama's military attack was not in response to an attack on the United States, its territory or possessions, or its armed forces. It was an entirely unprovoked attack, entirely unauthorized, and accordingly, it was entirely illegal. I think as we go forward, we need to get back to some basic fundamental understandings about the constitutional parameters of war powers. The American founders made a sharp distinction between starting a war and waging a war for some very good reasons. They understand that this most solemn and lethal decision should not be entrusted to one individual whose authority would be greatly augmented by it. The decision to start a war was given exclusively to Congress to assure that every voice in the country was heard and that Congress, once having taken that stand, would be obligated to put the resources of the country behind that war and those fighting it. But once the war is begun, the founders wanted a single commander-in-chief directing it with clear and unambiguous authority. There is no surer path to military disaster than having 535 squabbling prima donnas second-guessing every decision being made. Thus, the president can wage war but cannot declare it, and the Congress can declare war but cannot wage it. The founders debated these principles thoroughly during the Constitutional Convention. They recognized that the president did need certain residual military power to repel an attack when Congress couldn't act. And I believe the War Powers Act faithfully defines these circumstances and establishes a framework to contain them. But the War Powers Act does not give the president the authority to launch military attacks except in response to a direct attack on our country, nor can it limit the president's authority as commander-in-chief once Congress does authorize war. The separation of war powers between the legislative and executive branches has been badly blurred in recent decades, and I do believe that we need to reestablish not only the constitutional principles that separate the declaring of war from the waging of war, but also the American tradition that we only go to war when we've been attacked. And when we must go to war, we have the utmost obligation to put the entire might and resources and attention of the nation behind it and to get it over with just as quickly as possible. Now, that's a legitimate debate to have. But that's not what the House did. It deliberately and recklessly undermined the position of the United States government and the United States Armed Forces that we sent to Iraq, shredding the tradition that politics stops at the water's edge. That is yet another stain upon the honor of this House, and one which should be deplored and condemned through the ages to come. I yield back.